This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in today's show, we'll have a conversation with Cincinnati civil rights icon Marion Spencer. But first this afternoon, Wall Street still seems to be bullish on the markets, but historically the summer months have not been kind to stocks. The Dow Jones Industrial Average posted slight losses in June and August and slight gains in July, on average over the last 20 years. Many analysts are at odds over what this summer will bring for the markets, and here to take a look at whether the markets will run hot or cold this summer are Peter Sorrentino, Senior Vice President with Huntington Real Strategies Fund, and local financial advisor Chris DeSimeo. You can join the conversation today at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Chris and Peter, good to see you this afternoon.
Thank you, Mark.
Always good to be here.
Chris, what has the summer typically been like for the Dow Jones Industrial Average over the past, say, 10, 20 years? It's kind of a doldrums kind of thing,
well,
hasn't it?
Generally, people who study cycles will talk about the six-month cycle and how, generally speaking, the months from October through April are better than May through the end of September. That's been the pattern. However, there are a lot of little sayings like sell in May and go away, and they seem to work until they don't. last year it didn't work. And also keep in mind that some of the biggest rallies ever in the history of the stock market took root during the summer doldrums. I'm thinking of 1982's mid-August rally that went on with a few little interruptions until 2000. It was a 17-year event. So it's not always helpful to go by maxims. It helps more to do your own homework.
Don't put too much stock in this whole thing about summer, then.
Some of the most dangerous things ever that to your portfolio are maxims. So Peter has lots of them, but they're all designed to raise more questions than answer them. Right, Peter?
Well, Chris, I'm mindful of the Santayana comment, those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. So I think it's important to be mindful of history, but don't become a slave to it, because the backdrop changes as we've seen, rules that you and I learned back in college about how the economy and how regulation works since the financial crisis have all been tossed out the window. So it's a whole new rule book.
Yeah, think about oil prices going from $100 a barrel down to 50, into the 40s. People said it's going back to 20. Here we are with a much lower cost of gasoline, which, as that unfolded back in the fall, did drive a lot of money into the consumer discretionary names. And yet there's a question about how sustainable that kind of move is. What, as you manage money with your colleagues there at Huntington Advisors, what are some of the implications for investors now that the fall in energy prices is about, 7 months ago? Is it still okay to be in consumer discretionaries, or should we be looking for something else?
Well, Chris, one of the things that you and I had spoken about in some of our previous sessions together was that the employment picture, even though the headline number that we all see was getting better markedly, the overall number, the U6 number that we talk about, which is the real workforce, that number really had stalled out. It's gotten a lot better in the last year, and that's really the secret behind what where the consumer has suddenly been getting stronger. We've seen housing sales pick up. First-time home buyers, for literally the first time since the financial crisis, are now driving home sales.
First-time home buyers.
First-time home buyers. Instead of living in mom and dad's basement, they're now actually out forming households, and household formation drives the U.S. economy, at least historically. So that missing piece of this recovery has now started to come into play. There are some other, I think, disconcerting trends that are beginning to emerge out there, but it's a good sign for the stability of the U.S. economy that the consumer is coming back, but they're coming back gradually. That discount that you you talked about that we got in fuel prices, at first they didn't spend it. They banked it, and we saw the savings rate begin to climb and breaking through 5%.
That should be good, though, shouldn't it? Aren't we supposed to be saving money?
I know. This is the perverse thing. That which we encourage people to do, when we see them do it, we go, yeah, we'll do it, but don't do it right now. Do that later.
Yeah. And Peter, yesterday we got the consumer spending figures, which were up a lot more than what anybody expected. I think they were up 0.9% for the month. Do you see that trend continuing?
Well, really, as long as we see housing activity at this level, again, you have to be careful of maxims, but one of the things that we've noticed through history is that housing activity precedes consumer activity by about 6 months. And when you think about it, what do you do when you buy a house? You new drapes, blinds,
TVs.
Carpet, TVs. And typically, change begets change. Most people buy a new car, oddly enough, within 6 months of buying a house. So this bodes pretty well for car sales, which I know there were some concerns about. So when you see housing begin to trail off, then figure you got about 6 months before, you know, the consumer stocks start to really, you know, show it at inflection and begin to trail as well.
But won't this economic activity that's beginning to pick up, as you mentioned, cause interest rates to go higher, which, if left unchecked, might, you know, cut off the growth before it takes hold?
Well, Chris, that's one of the interesting things that's not getting a lot of press with all the other news that's out there, is that if you look at interest rates, they've already begun to climb. Very quietly, without a lot of fanfare, we've seen the 30-year mortgage has broken back above 4% again. If you bought the 30-year bond in May, you're already 5 points underwater because the 30-year rate has moved up. So rates are moving without the Fed acting. The markets are basically taking it upon themselves, and they're driving rates.
Yeah, the 10-year bond, which is now the new benchmark, got down to, about 1.6?
Mm-hmm.
And here it is now at 2.4. And those 80 basis points, as we call them, don't seem like a lot. But when you think about it, that's a 50% increase in the cost of borrowing money. If you were borrowing $1 million and you're paying 1.6, that's $16,000 a year. But if you're paying 2.4, that's $24,000 a year. And so, yes, 1.6 may have been a very, and some would say, artificially low number. 2.4 is higher, but where is normal? Where, in your opinion, Pete, could interest rates head to before they start posing stiff competition for the equity markets?
Well, Chris, you touched on a great number, that because the 10-year Treasury is often viewed as the risk-free rate of return when you compare stocks to other alternatives. So as that rate climbs, the position of the value, if you will, of the stock market at large becomes ever more difficult to defend because it's a discounting factor. So as that rate rises, it gets tougher and tougher to justify stocks at these prices. You know, if you're looking at stocks as a discounted stream of future earnings, that present value should be falling. So stocks holding these levels, it's very difficult to justify just if you do the math. So, you know, some of this, I think, is splash over from European quantitative easing, but it's all, you know, tying together now.
We will continue our conversation about where the markets could be headed this summer. So get out your crystal ball. Give us your prediction. 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
Cincinnati Edition is sponsored by the Hale and Johnson Foundations, now investing in individuals via People's Liberty. You can learn more about grant and residency opportunities at peoplesliberty.org.
Support comes from Hospice of Cincinnati. If you haven't discussed what you want at the end of life, they've helped thousands of families have those conversations. When the focus changes from cure to care, it's not giving up, it's speaking up. Experience compassionate caring with Hospice of Cincinnati. You can visit their website or reach them at 513-891-7700.
Follow 91.7 WVXU on Twitter to satisfy your curiosity about the world and get the news as it happens around town, throughout the country, and across the globe.
Support for WVXU comes from community-minded businesses and organizations like yours that strive to be successful. Find out how your business or organization can benefit from underwriting opportunities on WVXU by calling 513-419-7110 or by visiting WVXU.org.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests this afternoon are Peter Sorrentino, Senior Vice President with Huntington Real Strategies Fund, and local financial advisor Chris DeSimio. Summer can be a cruel time for the market, so where do you think things are headed? 513-419-7100 to join the conversation. Email talk at WVXU.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Chris, you said 2.4% on the 10-year. Is that
it's about where it is right now, Peter? Has it changed any this morning? You've got your printout right there in front of you.
No, sir. We're 2.471 at the moment. So, but again, that bond is underwater versus what they paid for it when it was newly issued. So,
yeah, well, it's interesting because like you're saying, Chris, it doesn't seem like it's all that much. But if you have long-term bonds, it's pretty painful time right now for the bond market.
Well, and that's the kind of thing that causes people to, you know, tap on the brakes or push in the clutch. It's this cumulative hesitation that sometimes can just cause this lull in the action that makes investors kind of vulnerable to being swayed by either excessive fear or greed. When there's this, we've had all this choppiness, people are seeing volatility, markets up 100 points one day, down 100 the next day. And it does cause people to kind of tap on the brakes, sort of like going down the Kenwood Cut in the hill, and you can't see around the corner. So there's nothing going on usually, but it just keeps people, you know, the red lights keep working their way up the hill. And that's sometimes what happens in the summer. Especially, Peter and I have talked about this, when you mention what are the summer doldrums, remember that the people who were down there in New York, if you want to see a lonely place, something out of a Twilight Zone, go down to around Wall Street in the summertime. It's almost abandoned. Mm-hmm. And they're out in the Hamptons. They're trying to get out of town. And volume can really thin out. You've seen that before, haven't you, Peter?
Well, not only does the volume thin out, but the capital thins out. And if you look at some of the smaller submarkets, whether it's the over-the-counter market or even in the options market, the ability to get transactions off in the summertime is really hampered because no one's willing to step up and commit capital. And so even though the volatility indicator, the widely quoted VIX, appears to be, you know, setting new lows daily, if you're in an individual security or trying to traffic in one, it can be a very difficult market in the summer because there's no liquidity out there.
Yeah, and it's interesting because one of the areas that has gotten a lot of traction lately have been the regional banks, because people think that they might start, their margins might improve as rates rise a little bit because they might pay a little more on their checking accounts, but they're going to charge double that more to borrow the same money. And yet, if you look at some of these regional banks, the bigger ones, which don't need to be named, but any large regional bank with a value of a total market value of $5 billion or $10 billion or $15 billion, the difference between what you can buy it for and sell it for is usually a penny. But if you look at some well-known regional banks, names you would recognize, but are smaller, $100 million, $150 million, there might be a 2 or 3% spread between the bid and the ask, what you can buy it for and what you can sell it for. And that does introduce an element of risk, because you may want to buy and there's very little for sale, or you may want to sell and there aren't any buyers around.
That is the risk, is that in some of these smaller stocks in the summertime, is you end up driving the market.
You are the market.
You are the market. Effectively, you can drive the stock up if you're buying, and you can drive it down if you're selling. And so this whole thing, we've gotten sort of, we think of stock trading as somewhat antiseptic, where we punch a button on our E-Trade or whatever account, and suddenly a transaction goes off. In the background, there's actually someone having to fill those orders. And so there's a disconnect between the reality of what actually goes on in the financial markets and our modern-day perception of how that works.
Yeah.
Peter, you're talking about lower volume. But can't that also work to an investor's advantage? I mean, if you have lower volume, it's not, I think the term is frothy, they could choose. It's not as likely to be a frothy market during the summer months.
Absolutely.
So it's not like A&W root beer where you have all the foam on top of it.
Well, something we talked about earlier with the giant pools of money that are run by hedge funds and some of the large institutions. And when you get into the months where you see less volume, you're less likely to get trampled in a stampede by these guys, because if they're going into or out of a position, it's like getting crushed under the chariot wheels in the old Ben-Hur saga. So it can be for someone who's trying to build a position in a stock they know well. These are the kind of months when a stock trader can do quite well at this, because as Chris pointed out, there's some anomalies oftentimes where you can buy at discounts and sell at artificial premiums. So by staying away from the elephants when they're mating, you can do well.
Okay, what are you laughing about?
I have no reply. There are no words that can follow that description.
Okay.
But investing can be a dangerous place.
Yes, it can be, as Mark Twain so well noted. With all the talk of summer being a downtime, does it make sense for someone to be looking at their 401k and see if they should be making adjustments to their holdings right now?
I would say that really that's the best time is when it's quiet, when you know you're really away from a news cycle, when you've got time to sit down and focus and divorce yourself from all the news stories. You know, turn off the television, think about your personal situation, think about your long-term goals and objectives, and act you know with purpose, but also you know with a sort of a cold. Calculating mentality, if you will, get away from the human passions, because those are typically an investor's worst nightmare.
Fear and greed, really, those two main drivers are the enemies of all good long-term financial planning.
Yeah, the champion of the option trading contest for years were always ex-Marines. And when they did a psychological study, realized that it was because they would set an objective, achieve the objective, and move on. So they weren't adverse to selling their winners. They wouldn't cut. You know, they weren't adverse to cutting losses. So it was that disciplined approach which led to their success. And that's excellent for anyone to remember.
Yeah.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. So are there any particular, talk about consumer discretionary banks, are there any particular stocks, groups of stocks, investments that seem to defy the summer doldrums that are good things to look into this time of year?
Oh, that would be, at this point, if you think about we're at the peak driving cycle when a lot of people are hitting the roads. And if you look at what's going on in the energy space, even though the prices of oil have rebounded almost 50% off the low, for the most part, a lot of the energy names are really languishing. And yet there will still be some hardship in those groups, but they tend to get sold off en masse. And so at this point, those in utility stocks, which are viewed as interest rate sensitive, have also been hit pretty hard. I hate to call it, the Warren Buffett, cigar butt style of investing, but in a way, in a market where you run the risk of overpaying, if you look at those that have been trounced pretty hard, you're less likely to commit that sin.
Be patient, is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that would make sense. This all seems to point out that trying to time and predict the market are things that would be best left to the pros. And so for most investors, the strategy should be to do your research and find a good investment and then stick with it, whether it's the summer or fall, winter or spring.
Exactly. There's never a bad season to think calmly about your financial future.
Well, Peter and Chris, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Mark.
Peter Sorrentino, Senior Vice President with Huntington Asset Advisors, and local financial advisor Chris DeSimio. Coming up, we'll be talking with Marian Spencer about her life and civil rights legacy. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.